Good morning. It's Monday, September 30th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, a looming dock workers' strike could rattle the economy in the final stretch of the 2024 election. How Texas's near-total abortion ban puts women's lives at risk. And SNL kicks off its 50th season. But first, the full extent of the damage wrought by Hurricane Helene is only starting to become clear. As of Monday morning, across six states, more than 100 people have died. Millions are without power. Roads have been destroyed, neighborhoods turned to lakes, and thousands of people lack access to safe drinking water. In North Carolina, the storm produced the worst flooding the state has seen in a century. The damage was particularly acute across parts of the western region of the state, where rain totals are being measured in some places in feet. In Buncombe County, home to Asheville, images show serious devastation and seemingly endless water. Officials there received hundreds of missing persons reports over the weekend. The mountainous western part of the state is effectively isolated. Landslides and floods forced a major interstate and hundreds of roads to close, and the water supply has been significantly damaged. Laura Hackett, a reporter for Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville, told PBS NewsHour about the aftermath yesterday.
It's been almost total infrastructure loss in Asheville. It's been really hard. There's no water in the city currently. Cell service has been gone, internet, power. We're just starting to get a little bit back online. Some people are starting to get cell service. So it's been really challenging. Water is definitely the most dire thing right now.
The city's mayor said that it could possibly take weeks for water access to be fully restored. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper spoke to CNN yesterday about efforts to help people in the region.
This is a devastating catastrophe of historic proportions. People that I talked to in Western North Carolina say they have never seen anything like this. Our number one priority right now is getting people out and getting supplies in. There are search and rescue teams from 19 states, from the federal government, from our National Guard, from our state and local teams who are out there rescuing people as we speak.
Other dramatic scenes played out in states across the Southeast. In Florida, they saw record storm surges, up to 15 feet in some places. At a small hospital in Irwin, Tennessee, rescue workers had to make multiple attempts by boat and helicopter to save dozens of patients and members of their staff who were huddled on the roof as the water surged. The hospital administrator told the local CBS and ABC affiliate about the rescue and just how quickly the water rushed in.
It was just the grace of God. We had ample amount of people to move people up to the roof, and we were able to put the non-ambulatory patients in the boats and keep them safe and have medical personnel with the patients in the boats as well. And we kind of had them in a corner protected by a couple of walls.
Even more rain is possible in the region in the coming days. Blue Ridge Public Radio has put together a list of resources if you'd like to help flood victims in North Carolina. Now to a labor dispute that threatens to shut down ports across the East Coast and seriously disrupt the economy just weeks before the election. And it mostly comes down to one person to decide whether a strike should happen as soon as tomorrow, a union leader named Harold Daggett. He's the president of the International Longshoremen's Association, or the ILA, which represents tens of thousands of dock workers. He's been an outspoken critic of the Biden administration and has a reputation for being hard-nosed. Federal authorities even accused Daggett of having ties to the mob. He was acquitted in one conspiracy case. Another is still pending in court. Right now, he's negotiating the ILA's new six-year contract with the shipping industry. He's pushing hard for higher wages, and he has said very plainly, including in this recent video for the ILA, that if the union's demands aren't met, he'll make sure it hurts the economy.
When my men hit the streets, from Maine to Texas, every single port will lock down. You know what's going to happen? I'll tell you. First week, be all over the news every night, boom, boom. Second week, guys who sell cars can't sell cars because the cars ain't coming in off the ships. They get laid off. Third week, malls start closing down.
We reached out to Politico reporter Rai Rivard, who's been following the contract negotiation talks, and he says what Daggett's promising there is a bit of an overstatement.
I think that's a little too severe, but there would certainly be impacts, billions of dollars a day of impacts to commerce and the supply chain, depending on sort of what estimate you're looking at.
Short term, Rivard told us that it would be somewhat disruptive to the economy.
But a long-term strike, you're talking about a significant portion of the nation's cargo, somewhere near half, that's coming and going.
Yesterday, the union reaffirmed its intentions to strike tomorrow. The White House has urged both sides to negotiate. President Biden could intervene by invoking what's called the Taft-Hartley Act to effectively prevent a strike. He has said that he won't.
The political position that the president would be put in is a very difficult one. He doesn't want to offend unions, which are a big part of the Democratic coalition, particularly his coalition. But Vice President Harris is running for election, trying to paint a sunny view of the economy, which we know some people are not buying and could be a major issue. So pitting unions, a base of the Democratic Party, versus a problem for the supply chain is just really a nightmare scenario, probably for any president, particularly for a Democratic president in a very close election.
If dock workers end up walking off the job, it would be the first strike of its kind for the ILA since 1977. In the 2+ years since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, nearly half of the states in the U.S. have banned or heavily restricted abortion. And while most of these state-level laws include exceptions for medical emergencies, in some cases, doctors have turned away patients with severe and sometimes life-threatening pregnancy complications. That's what happened to Kelsey Norris de la Cruz, a 25-year-old in Texas.
She knew enough about the laws to know that under the laws, you still could treat a woman in a medical emergency. But still, they turned her away.
That's Caroline Kitchener, a reporter for The Washington Post covering abortion, telling us Norris de la Cruz's story. In early January, when she found out she was pregnant, she and her boyfriend were thrilled. But then they received a devastating diagnosis. Norris de la Cruz likely had an ectopic pregnancy. This is when an embryo implants and grows outside of the uterus, making the pregnancy non-viable. It's extremely dangerous, and if not immediately treated, it can be deadly. Although Texas prohibits abortion under almost all circumstances, the law explicitly allows doctors to treat ectopic pregnancies. But doctors at a hospital in the Dallas-Fort Worth area refused to treat Norris de la Cruz, saying there was a chance the pregnancy was still viable. Doctors told her to go home and wait.
So she calls her best friend when she leaves the hospital, and her best friend is, you know, obviously also outraged, and she says, you know what? I have an appointment with my OBGYN today. I'm going to ask them about this. And she does, and the doctors say, bring your friend in today. Tell your friend to come today.
When she went in to see the OBGYN, he recommended surgery as soon as possible. 3 hours later, the doctor performed that surgery, and Norris de la Cruz survived. But it was a close call.
The pregnancy had already started to rupture. And once that happens, women die that way. It can be very quick. It's extremely dangerous. And so she is okay. And, you know, it worked out. She was able to get the treatment that she needed. But you just have to wonder what would have happened if her friend hadn't had that appointment and she hadn't been able to get care from somebody else.
The Post asked 4 OBGYNs to review Norris de la Cruz's medical records with her permission. All of them said the hospital should have offered emergency care. And they told Kitchener they suspect Texas's abortion ban and the potential legal repercussions for physicians made doctors at the hospital too afraid to treat her. A doctor in Texas convicted of providing an illegal abortion can face up to 99 years in prison, a $100,000 fine, and lose their medical license. When Kitchener asked the hospital for their comment on this case, a representative said they believe they provided, quote, appropriate care to Norris de la Cruz. You can hear more of Kitchener's reporting on how abortion bans are impacting women's lives and the role that this issue is playing in the 2024 election on our latest episode of Apple News in Conversation. If you're listening in the Apple News app right now, stick around after today's show. It'll be queued up to play for you next. Before we let you go, a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app. Israel has carried out a series of strikes in Lebanon over the past few days. Early this morning, an apparent Israeli strike hit a residential apartment building in central Beirut. Also this morning, Hamas confirmed one of its leaders was killed in an Israeli strike on a refugee camp in Lebanon. This all comes after Israeli strikes have killed 7 senior Hezbollah leaders in the past 10 days or so, including longtime leader Hassan Nasrallah on Friday. That death left officials in the Biden administration feeling blindsided, according to reporting from NBC News. It's a further indication, they say, of how Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is dictating the terms of a broadening conflict in the Middle East, leaving the Biden White House on the sidelines and further stymieing ceasefire talks. In the U.S., a recent report from PEN America, a free speech advocacy group, found that public school book bans had almost tripled during the 2023 to 2024 academic year. The group found that there were over 10,000 books banned during the year. The increase, they say, is due to state laws that have made it easier to remove books from school shelves. And finally, SNL kicked off its 50th season over the weekend, answering the question of who will play the most significant political figures of this presidential election. Maya Rudolph returned to play Vice President Kamala Harris, with Jim Gaffigan taking the stage as Tim Walz.
I haven't been this excited since I got a 10% rebate on a leaf blower from Menards. What can I say? I got that BDE, Big Dad Energy.
Some other old familiar faces: Dana Carvey played President Biden, Andy Samberg was second gentleman Doug Emhoff, and from the current cast, Bone Yang played J.D. Vance, and James Austin Johnson returned as former President Donald Trump. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, the rest of my conversation with Caroline Kitchener about abortion in America is coming up next. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News in Conversation to find that episode. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.